Hey, this is Matthew Sweet, and you're listening to Melting Pot on KPFK Los Angeles 90.7 FM, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, and worldwide at kpfk.org. Woo!
You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM and Melting Pot. You just heard music from Matthew Sweet from the album Girlfriend, the song that leads off the album. It's called Divine Intervention, and it's my great pleasure to welcome into our studios at the moment Matthew Sweet, who is here with us. How are you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing really fantastic.
Awesome.
It's a major thing for me to have you in here. These records were really important. To me, coming up, and in some ways, one of the ways I describe them sometimes to people is they were kind of like gateway drugs for me into a lot of other really fantastic music too, and they were really soundtracks for a long time. So it's a really big honor to have you here.
Thanks so much. It's my pleasure, and that's so nice of you to say.
Yeah, and I wanted to focus most of our attention on these two records, on Girlfriend, which celebrated a 20th anniversary a couple years ago, and Altered Beasts, which has a 20th anniversary pretty much right now, especially just because they're really so connected to each other. But I feel like we should talk just a little bit about how you came into music.
Okay.
And also the music that you created before Girlfriend. You know, a lot of people, I think, thought Girlfriend was your debut record, but it was your third by that time.
That's right, yeah.
So could we talk a little bit about that? I know you grew up in Nebraska and, and started playing fairly quickly out there when you were young. At what age did you start writing songs?
Well, I probably started writing songs, or trying to write songs is more like what it felt like, you know, because it was a sort of a mystery to me. Where does that stuff come from, you know? I hadn't kind of found that spot. But I think I started trying to do it probably around 9th or 10th grade, maybe 10th grade. I was a bass player first, so a lot of my early, you know, I played recorder and I played the violin in like 3rd and 4th grade, and then in 5th grade I got an electric bass. And so I spent a couple of years just playing along with records on the bass. That's really how I started, and a lot of it was crazy. There were things like Yes records that I played along with and learned to play the bass parts, which were very crazy and creative and sort of unusual, you know. A lot of other records I just played along, so I heard the bass, you know, a lot. So that's really where I started out as a bass player. And then by the time I was in 9th or 10th grade, they started to have multi-track cassette recorders, and that was like sounded so cool to me, like you could overdub and add parts to yourself or something, you know. And that was really what helped me get into wanting to write songs, is wanting to mess with recording. And so I learned to play guitar a little bit, just so I could play guitar and bass and stuff on recordings that I made. And so those were kind of the first songs I guess I wrote, and I recorded them in my closet with a four-track cassette. And I only ever played anyone anything if they listened on headphones on a Walkman. I couldn't be in a room with anything out loud because it all sounded weird to me then, you know? So that's how I kind of started getting it. And I would play those for only people I kind of knew the best. I'd have listened to my tapes and stuff. And I was in some bands when I was real young who were older and playing kind of new wave covers and 60s covers. And then when I got out of high school, I moved to Athens, Georgia to go to school. I'd run into the guys in REM, and because I had their 45 on Hibtone, their first 45 they made themselves of Radio Free Europe backed with Sitting Still. So when they came to play at the Drumstick in Lincoln, where I grew up, I went to see them play, and I kind of met them. I'd been listening to some Mitch Easter solo stuff that was on a compilation record that I had. So I was like, what's Mitch Easter like, you know? And they put me in touch with Mitch, and Mitch sent me like a million of his demos and stuff. And it was just like amazing because I was still in high school, but there was this whole world. It was kind of exotic to me, you know, growing up in the Midwest. And it was there that I really started to write songs, you know, that I felt like were representative of who I was. But even when I got my first record deal, and you mentioned the early records, I got this development deal with Columbia in 1985. I graduated high school in 83, and I moved to Athens. So unbelievably, I was only there a couple of years, but it felt like 10 years of my life or something. I just did so much there.
Yeah.
And I got this development deal in 85 with Columbia Records, and they paid for my then wife and I to move to New York for me to get more home recording stuff, which is always my habit and dream, you know. And then I made an album after sort of 8 or 10 months when they thought I had songs. And that was my first record, which is called Inside. And it's made some of it in London with different – it's all made with different producers doing a couple of songs. It was kind of a thing people were doing a lot at that time. In general, I think you'll find some records that are done that way. And so I, you know, I first worked with Scott Litt on that. Some people, a couple different people in England, Dave Allen, who had worked with The Cure a lot, and Martin Rushent. And he became a good friend of mine. And we eventually made my second record with just he and I. I guess maybe Fred was a producer on that too. I'm not sure. He and Fred Marr and I. And that was called Earth. And that record was for A&M. My A&R guy left Columbia in the meantime, got me out of my deal, but then I had to wait for him to start because he's kind of a lame duck. And he had to wait a while to go to A&M. But when he went to A&M, he actually signed me there and I made an album. And Girlfriend was really a second album that I was making for A&M when we were recording it. And right at the end of recording, they sold A&M to Polygram, I think. And the guy who was my A&R guy got ousted. There was kind of a power play for who was going to run it. And he ended up leaving. And there was this guy, David Anderle, who was... In the meantime, acting as the A&R guy there. And he's a classic guy from way back with Brian Wilson and the 60s kind of pop scene of stuff we love. And he liked the record. He listened to the record and we talked to him about it. And he was like, it's really cool. I dig these little things, you know. And he said, you know, they're never going to, it'll take so long and they're not going to put money behind it, you know? And so we said, well, can you help us sell the, let us sell it. So even though we'd spent some good money making the album, ultimately we sold it to Zoo Entertainment for next to nothing. And it wasn't until Girlfriend became a big success that they had to pay back A&M for it. So it was this little record in limbo. It was real, really weird. And I almost had deals for it and then they'd kind of go away. And a lot of younger people in A&R departments liked it, but their bosses wouldn't pull the trigger, you know. But it became really well known among kind of younger A&R people and stuff, and that kind of kept the tape alive. And once it came out, I think it had a little bit of some underground thing that helped it. And once it got on college radio, it started to go up. And
yeah, well, I mean, when you think about those first couple records, the first couple records seem very much like connected to that kind of Athens kind of sound and the kind of the way I think about kind of mid 80s college kind of sounds. But Girlfriend sounds like wholly different. And that was one of the things that I was wondering. It was interesting to hear you tell the story because originally I actually thought that maybe you'd gotten out of the deal after the second record and then started work on it, but you'd actually been working on Girlfriend kind of that entire time while things were in limbo.
Well, kind of. I mean, I had some of the songs then, but a lot of them I was writing once we made the record. I did some touring with Lloyd Cole. I played bass on his first solo record, and we toured that spring before we made Girlfriend. And I rented a house outside of the city in Princeton, New Jersey. It was about an hour away on a train line for the $1,000 it cost to rent a studio in New York, a studio apartment. And this is then. That was, you know, average. You couldn't get much cheaper, you know. And out in Princeton, for the same amount of money, I had a whole house that was built in 1780, was on this old road right by this gorgeous, huge Princeton Battlefield State Park, the Institute for Advanced Study, which is a, you know, an Oppenheimer's think tank where they brought all the scientists after World War II, is full of genius people working on a lot of stuff, is right back near there. And I would ride my bike through these forest areas between all these places. So it was a really great place to be. And I set up a drum kit in the house and started playing live drums on my demos. And when my manager, I think he'd just become my manager, he was my lawyer before, this guy Russell Carter, who I'm still with, amazingly, he wrote me, I guess he must have called me, and said, you know, your demos really remind me of Neil Young. And I was like, oh, I know I'm a terrible singer or whatever, you know, like I didn't know too much about Neil Young really then. And so he's like, no, it's good. Let me send you some of this stuff. So he sent me these Neil Young records, and they were just amazing to me. Like, for some reason, it just clicked. Mm-hmm. And I just discovered that kind of right when we were making Girlfriend. So I know, like, we played some of those records and Harvest to get sort of the sound from Winona, like that kind, or the beats, or some of them are kind of taken from that stuff. Uh-huh. But it was doing those live demos, even though I was a really terrible drummer, it did something great with the music. I grew up, you know, because I grew up with the Porta Studio and the multi-track cassette recorders, you know, the only way I could have drums most of my youth was little drum machines that started to exist. So even up through my second record, I used drum machines a lot, even though we, you know, none of my Athens projects had drum machine on them or anything. I was trying to get the drum machine to be like real drums because I just didn't know anything different. I'd never played live a lot or worked with a drummer very much. So that opened my eyes, like, wow, real drums are awesome. And even though it's futuristic to program things, because I always wanted to be not retro, in fact, it was through doing something way more traditional and kind of influenced by like Revolver, things that I liked that sound that was really dry. They allowed me to have my music kind of work, you know, and it just sort of suddenly worked and we're like, this is awesome. So we went in and recorded it, you know, pretty quickly. We did like a week or two batches where we did 3 to 5 songs, and we did that, you know, 3 or 4 times, and we had the whole record.
I wanted to talk about the songs and how they came together, but first I wanted to ask a question about songwriting for you, especially around that period of time. From what I've read, relationship issues played a major part in the writing of Girlfriend, and quite a few of the songs seem to reflect that. But I was wondering if kind of more generally, if songwriting is often kind of like a means of catharsis for you, or is it a way that you kind of are able to let go of things, or?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's best for me when I just have that feeling and it's just coming out and it's not very thought out exactly. I think I always felt like people thought it was much more careful and planned than it was. Mm-hmm. Like I remember when Girlfriend came out and people were like, you know, the craft is so, and I would just be like, you know, it was very haphazard. We did not craft it, but I guess we did, you know, but it just sort of didn't seem like the right word to me. And I think it's because you can't make that happen with like a song. A song has to just come out of the air. And it, I think more than specific circumstances, just my moods affected then and will affect and do affect now when I write. If I'm in a mood that's very extreme, it usually is really easy to write. Even though the thing I say might not really be about anything real, the feelings in it are kind of real, you know? So, and even in Girlfriend, I think people thought it was probably more autobiographical than it really was. It wasn't exactly word for word, you know, the identities were mixed up and some of them, you know, it could have been the person I was with singing to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was a little bit mixed up for me in that way. But I just find, I don't know, if I get kind of playing a guitar and I start humming something and it starts to happen, I don't ever do that and then it doesn't happen. It's more like now I just, only certain times I sit down and do that. But I've never really felt like I can't write, that kind of feeling, you know?
Yeah.
But there's times when I guess I've done so much writing that you start to kind of feel like you don't know what any of it is, kind of. So these days I kind of, I guess just subconsciously I'll wait a little bit in between times when I get into writing. And I've been in through a long one just because of all this Girlfriend touring and having to do an 80s, a third volume for the stuff with Susanna Hoff. So it's been a little bit of a jam.
Do you find it's, is it, I know you were saying that a lot of it depends on your mood, but is it easier when you write songs to kind of try and draw inspiration from things that have happened to you, kind of more of like an autobiographical approach, or kind of stepping into somebody else's shoes, as you were saying, that some of the songs are actually may be connected to something that happened to you, but it's not really from your perspective.
It's like more that the emotions relate, you know what I mean? And for me, it's just so much more emotional thing writing than it is a thinking thing. I almost hesitate to claim ever basing something on something because of that, as weird as that sounds. You know, but if there's something I was angry about or something I was sad about, and there always are those things, or something you're just happy that day, you know, all those things could yield a song if that's the day I'm writing songs, I guess. I don't know if any of this answers your question.
No, I think it absolutely does. And I think it's even, if we look at or think about some of these particular songs, maybe we'll get even more into some of that. A good place to start, I think, probably is with the title track with Girlfriend. Could you say anything about like where that song came from?
That song, yeah. It was a demo that I made. I played drums on, so that's where all those wacky stops and starts come from. And I made this demo, and it was pretty much like it is. It got changed a little bit in structure. And
it's originally titled Good Friend, wasn't it?
It was titled Good Friend, the demo. And a couple of people in my life, my manager, Russell Carter, and my friend Lloyd Cole at the time, both really reacted to that track. And to me, it was kind of like a throwaway one-liner a little bit, you know, like, you know, I want to make it with you or whatever, you know. But it didn't feel like something, you know, really important to me. But those guys really beat it on that song. And Lloyd's like, that's really good. It's really cool. You know, so then when we recorded it, Russell's like, we can get this on the radio, on rock radio. And I was like, good luck. You know? I just couldn't see how it'd ever be on radio. Like, I was just like, I'm getting away with making some records, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't expect to be liked or have an audience or anything. And by golly, they got that going and it did well on rock radio and really kind of helped the album. So it's never left me. We always play it. It's fun. It's a fun upbeat song, so it's kind of like a thing right up the alley of being a single. You know, for a record company, they're always like, "Your most throwaway thing will be your big hit single," and that's sort of true. But it's because, you know, a sad, important song, just that's not as much a radio song. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I understood.
Well, there are many songs on this record where the guitar work is just kind of out of this
Quine
world.
Played amazing guitar on Girlfriend.
Was that improvised or was there any kind of direction or plan with any
of
that?
Not a lot. You know, we did do a tremendous amount of comping, so we would just have them play whatever. And my tastes tended to go toward crazy, mistake-laden things at the time, but we would just kind of go through and make a little thing that worked. And sometimes it was the whole thing. Like that solo is probably made of three parts or something. I could be wrong. Jim Rondinelli would know this better than any of us probably because he was really engineering that record. That's how we do lead guitar always. I mean, with any lead guitar players or if I play it, you play through it and you don't want to have to be that structured if you want it to be free Jimi Hendrix-y type stuff or whatever. You just play a bunch of things with inspiration and then you go through and see what do I have and kind of figure out what you're going to use.
Okay, so why don't we take a listen to this song. It's probably the most famous song from the record. This is Matthew Sweet. The song is Girlfriend from the album Girlfriend as well that you're hearing right now on KPFK 90.7 FM and Melting Pot.
I need to be back in the arms of a good friend. you coming my way. Don't you need to get back in the arms of a good friend? Oh, cause honey, believe me, she'll love to call you my girlfriend. You need to get back in the arms of a good friend. Oh, cause honey, believe me, sure love to call you my girlfriend. Cause you got a good thing going, baby. You only need somebody. Looking for someone to love, cause you need to get back in the arms of a good friend.
So that was the song Girlfriend from an album of the same name released in 1991 by Matthew Sweet. Matthew Sweet is here in our studios. He's our guest and we're talking to him about the record. There's one little thing that I was interested in. And it's just like been in my mind. Whether or not that the way the song ends where everything drops down and then you have like the drum breakdown and everybody comes back in. Was that at all inspired by Curtis Mayfield's Move On Up?
No, but wow, what those records are unbelievable. No, I don't know what it was, honestly.
I just always wondered because that the same kind of thing happens there, and it has like that same kind of effect.
Yeah, well, it's probably because they, you know, it was a real thing happening. You know, yeah. What I mean, at that moment.
Yeah.
So it just feels like, you know, we definitely kept weird endings on things, and even later on, you know, stuff like "Sick of Myself" had mm-hmm. multiple endings on it.
Yeah.
And which is great for live because then we can end it like 10 times and make a ruckus.
And when the song came out, the first time I saw it was actually the video, which was on 120 Minutes on MTV uh-huh. back when they played videos.
Yes.
And I was one of a handful of people. No, one of a handful of people at the school that I went to that kind of knew about the record around the time that it came out. And then maybe like 4, 5, 6 months later, it blows up. And you were kind of talking about thinking that this is not a single. This is not going to go anywhere.
Yeah.
Were you really surprised at how like the kind of success that came
yes,
through that single?
I was because I just didn't. It wasn't something I gave much consideration to. I always felt like I was getting away with murder. Like, oh, I get to make a record. But the idea that it would sell and all that seemed just sort of foreign to me. I didn't feel connected to history very much because I'd made such a job of ignoring it kind of when I didn't want to be traditional. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But
then I started learning about everything old and it meant so much to me. So, yeah, I didn't ever expect that. And the only way I really knew it was happening is I just got really busy and I started having to play all the time and do interviews and stuff. And then I'd be talking to people and they'd be like, you know, how does it feel? What's happening? And then I'm like, I don't know, like what's happening? and that was sort of, but it was so overwhelming for me because I just didn't, I'd never, you know, I was a real hide in the bedroom kind of musician. Yeah. You know? So I'd never had to deal with people all the time, and it was sort of exhausting and weird for me. And I'd done very little performing. I was having to do acoustic things like this, and I just had, you know, one hundredth the ability that I do now to do it, and I can barely do it now. So all that stuff was pretty overwhelming, but, you know, it was awesome to see people know the songs and get excited, and I really just drank a lot and got crazy and played way too loud and was really moody, you know, on stage during those early years. Some nights I just couldn't even look up, and sometimes I was being insane. I don't know. But it's such a weird thing, success that way. But it was cool because I knew I'd be able to make some more records. You know, that's all I really wanted to do, you know.
Mm.
And I thought, well, at least I'm going to get to make some more records. At least I'll do that.
The second, at least I think it was the second single for that record was I've Been Waiting. And like Girlfriend, it was also a record that you chose to do an anime video for. Both of which at the time were something you didn't really see a whole lot in American TV, and especially not with like music videos, that kind of thing. It's also a song that I think a fair amount of people find a little bit mysterious in terms of the relationship that's kind of alluded to in the song. There may be a variety of ways to interpret the lines, but I was hoping maybe you could clear things up a little bit and maybe talk a little bit about I've Been Waiting.
Okay. I've Been Waiting was a song I had split up with my first wife, and I'd met this girl, Lisa, who I've been married to for 19 years now.
Wow.
We've been together for 25 or 6 years or something. It's crazy. I met this girl. I woke up in the morning one day, and she was going to come visit me in Princeton. I was alone in the house now, so I'm making my demos there, playing the drums, and with my cats. And I was just real excited she was going to come visit me, and this little song just popped out, and it was sort of just a little love song. And I remember I sent it to her. It was funny, you know. And so it was just a little "You're perfect. I've been waiting for you forever" kind of thing, you know what I mean? It had a couple things that I think really touched on people's feelings about relationships with the one that really pops to mind for me is "You Can Wear My Clothes." The idea of wearing the other person's clothes.
Yeah.
That's so cute.
Yeah.
And so when things started happening for Girlfriend and I had to do videos, you know, I hated myself. I hated looking at myself. I still do. And so I wanted it to be something besides me. If I could have had it only be animation, it would have only been animation. But they made me be in it, like a newscaster in it or something. And then in I've Been Waiting, we used it again. We had to hook up and kind of find the footage. So all that stuff was amazing. And then I went to Japan, and that was out of control and great. And Japanese people knew me as otaku, which is sort of supreme nerd person or whatever in Japan. I don't know that it's... I think
so
it might
beautiful.
Be kind of derogatory, but they knew me as sort of a psycho fan person.
Yeah.
Like, they should talk, because almost all of them are psycho fan people for something. They really get excited there, which is just awesome.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
And, or they used to anyway. But we still go and play shows, and it's awesome. Yeah. So that was, I tried to start putting things that were just my personal hobbies into the videos so I could stand doing them, kind of, you know?
Uh-huh.
And so I just think of these weird concepts and we do those and kind of get through it.
They definitely, you know, when you kind of look back at the way people were doing videos back then, it's kind of one of the things they stand out, and the anime that were chosen are things that kind of like these songs really hold up well, continue to have really strong fan bases.
It was amazing to see after that how it came over full force.
Yeah,
you know, and people know it very well in the culture now, you know, but at the time it was pretty outlandish, you know, to do. God, I remember we made that first video and we were, do you remember the, I'm talking to my bandmate, Paul Chastain, who happens to be sitting here. We played a show I guess for girlfriend, that was up in the Alps for a BMG conference in Austria, I guess, right? And we went in a room and they had like the edit on a videotape of, you know, one of the guys who ran the label was there or something. We watched it. It's like, it was cool watching videos. They cost so much then. You know what I mean? If we had, I'd had the production, the computer production ability that I have now, then I would have made my own videos, you know, but we just didn't quite have all that stuff.
Now, you mentioned right there that Paul's here in the studio with you. You actually have an acoustic guitar, and we're going to perform a couple songs during this. I was hoping we could get you to perform I've Been Waiting.
All right.
Okay. Great. So this is live here in our studios, Matthew Sweet, performing I've Been Waiting right here for you now on KPFK and Melting Pot.
Okay. I've Been Waiting. Take one. When you said to me, you are not so, did I know it then? I had just been told I didn't think I'd find you perfect in so many ways. I've been waiting, and I want to. I've been waiting, and I want to. And the secret on your lips that nobody knows, gentle in your eyes, you can wear my clothes. I didn't think I'd find you perfect in so many ways. I've been waiting, and I want to.
Matthew Sweet performing I've Been Waiting, an acoustic version, right here in our studios at KPFK Melting Pot 90.7 FM. We're talking about his landmark record Girlfriend, and talking about a variety of different songs that are on here. Most of the songs on Girlfriend seem kind of personal, but not very specific, except for Wynonna and Evangeline, though for very different things. Was Wynonna actually written for a person named Wynonna?
No.
I know a lot of people think it was written for Wynonna Ryder.
Yeah, no, I know, because it was sort of named after her.
Okay.
It was a general song. Mm. It wasn't called Wynonna. I don't know what I was going to call it, something mundane. And because I said movie star in it,
yeah,
my friend Lloyd Cole was like, you should call that song Wynonna, because I know you like that girl Wynonna a writer, because it was right kind of when Heathers came out,
yeah,
and stuff. And I was,
yeah,
sort of, I think I put up a like a magazine page from Heathers or something, so he saw it like when he was at my house. And and I was like, that's a pretty cool, because it's sort of country-ish. It kind of sounded funny, like a country title sort of. So I named it that, but it was not written for her, but it became kind of known as that. I did eventually meet her because she was dating Dave Perner, and we toured with Soul Asylum, like we're going to do again on some of these shows this summer.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was funny. She once came on stage and actually sang on the song Wynonna with us while we were on that tour. So we did connect on that level. As for Evangeline, that name's taken from a comic book called Evangeline, and it was it's basically a come on to, like, don't be a religious girl, come and make it with me, kind of like a girlfriend type thing. And so but in the comic book of Evangeline was really funny, because it was like it was super violent, but she's like fighting for God.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It was just this weird comic we found, and I bought all the issues of it, and it was kind of like this ultra babe, scantily clad chick, you know, fighting for good in a really violent and horrible way.
Yeah.
And so I used her name for that song, and that added to mentions of God that were in Divine Intervention to make some people think that Girlfriend was a sort of a religious record, which, if anything, they were more sarcastic references.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I got anything against anybody's beliefs, but yeah, it was not meant to be a religious record.
Yeah.
But more like, oh, God, where are you?
That's especially the case with Divine Intervention. I always,
yeah,
thought with Evangeline that there really should have been like a movie like The Adventures of Evangeline and the MC5 Sister Anne, like putting those two characters together and having you score it. That would have been a great idea.
Somebody
in Hollywood, hopefully, maybe think
it.
About that.
Hollywood.
Could we get you to play Wynonna here in our studios as well?
Sure, we can play it.
All right. So again, performing acoustically here at KPFK, this is Matthew Sweet along with Paul Chastain, and you're hearing them right now on Melting Pot 90.7 FM.
Tried to call you, but the line was busy. Were you talking to a friend? When I tried again much later, I didn't want to let it ring again, no. So you can see I've got a problem, backed by popular demand. Sometimes I want to keep it from you, and sometimes I think you'll understand. Could you be my long lost girl? It's true that I don't really know you. I'm alone in the world. I what I want from you. What I want from you. Could you be my little movie star? Could you be my long lost girl?
You just heard Matthew Sweet performing Winona here at KPFK 90.7 FM. We're talking about his album Girlfriend. Just recently celebrated 20th anniversary, and is also something that he's been performing shows for the last couple years of playing the record in its entirety. We actually will have some tickets to give away for upcoming show here in Los Angeles, where he's going to be doing that. In addition to some other bands that are playing some of their classic albums live, so stay tuned for that. Girlfriend, really, in some ways, in thinking about how the record is sequenced, how it sounds, especially on vinyl, but even on the CD, it really seems like a record that's kind of split in two. Like a lot of the more kind of love songs, like I've Been Waiting and Girlfriend, Winona, Evangeline, they're all in the first half of the record. And then the second half, everything, after Day for Night, everything kind of shifts into Night, and it's a lot of more like breakup songs, like You Don't Love Me and I Thought I Knew You. Was that something by design? Were you kind of
I don't think
plan,
I really planned that, although I love the sound of that.
Yeah,
that's really cool.
Uh-huh.
Cool interpretation of it. Mm. I did strongly want to preserve the idea of two sides of an album, because I grew up with that. It was just kind of what I knew, and CDs were very new, so I was still, you know, made the joke of recording vinyl sound at the end of the first side and the beginning of the second side, the needle goes down.
I think that might have been on the cassette as well.
It probably was.
Yeah,
the idea that I was nostalgic for vinyl, it wasn't even gone yet, you know.
Yeah.
It had been gone for like a year or something, so it's pretty fun. I did that for now, I guess, in advance. If that makes sense. But so I did think of it as two sides, but I don't think I really thought about – it was more just by feel. When you sequence a record, you just kind of go, okay, this.
That's interesting, because one of the things then that kind of happens because of the way the songs end up is the fact that it's on the same side with all these – more kind of breakup and more down kind of songs has always really affected how I hear your sweet voice, which in some ways to me should be just a very kind of on the face of it, very sweet kind of song. But when I hear it, I also feel, I can't help but feel like there's a little bit of sadness, as opposed to kind of like a love that you're in. It almost seems more like nostalgic for something that used to be.
It's a yearning for, you know, a mother figure, probably, sort of. Yeah, I mean, it has that. I understand exactly what you're saying, and now I realize it's making me feel sad in nighttime to think about that all those songs are there. And maybe that's part of why, you know, when we do Girlfriend, I mean, it is a lot of songs. There's 15 songs on the album because we added these bonus tracks that we did kind of to everything. It was sort of theoretically a thing on CDs. You put bonus tracks on it and it justifies buying a CD or whatever. Mm-hmm. But for us, it was more like we'll put everything we did on it. when we play it live, I feel like it takes a lot out of me. Like just somehow... it's a lot, and I think it's because of those emotions and things our very personal feeling and stuff. So when I go through the whole thing, it's almost like going through all that range of feelings, you know. I can see why you would feel that. And then when we're playing, I don't know if we'll do this on this tour because I don't know if we'll really have time to get into even the bonus tracks. But I end Girlfriend by playing Nothing Lasts, which is a really kind of a sad, poignant thing. And it's, I like singing it, though. I really like singing those songs. And your sweet voice, too. We have fun singing it.
Yeah. Thinking about kind of the, I guess, for lack of a better word, legacy of Girlfriend now, 20-plus years on. And as we were talking about earlier, prior to the interview, you know, it's something that you started doing these tours when it was the actual 20th anniversary, but you've been kind of playing the record for a couple of years. A lot of people really enjoy hearing the record, hearing it performed live and hearing the entire record. You know, 20 years listening to this album, as a listener, it's really held up nicely. What's the experience been like performing Girlfriend in its entirety these last couple of years?
It's really cool, you know. The audience is older, obviously. Some of them have kids. There's a few younger people that they were, you know, 12 or 13 when they got into it or whatever. So everybody's a lot older, but I find that they're very attentive. They really, really appreciate it. They're delighted that, you know, I can sing the songs and be there and they can be there. And that's just awesome. You know, I really enjoy playing shows. I have for kind of a long time because it's just a chance to see the people that care about the music. You know, I didn't always feel really comfortable about it, but the last 10 years or so, I've really gotten a lot more relaxed about performing. I don't care at all about things like monitors and stuff. I'll just make do. I never get, you know, mad about anything. And we've had such good turnouts for our shows doing Girlfriend. It's just, it's almost like the old days. It's just everybody's a little less drunk and crazy, but they're very enthusiastic. It's fun. It's not like an old folks thing or anything.
And I'd mentioned earlier that we had tickets to see Matthew Sweet perform Girlfriend. This is part of what's called the LP Tour. And also along for the ride are Soul Asylum, Big Head Todd and the Monsters, and members of the Wailers, all performing classic albums. And Matthew Sweet will be performing Girlfriend. This is happening on Saturday, July 20th at the Gibson Amphitheater, just almost across the street here from KPFK in Universal City here in Los Angeles. If you would like to go and see Matthew Sweet perform Girlfriend from start to finish as part of the LP Tour over at the Gibson Amphitheater on July 20th, give me a call right now, 818-985-5735. We have a few pairs of passes for this, so, you know, give me a second to get the phones and get all the information and whatnot. Once again, tickets to see Matthew Sweet, along with Soul Asylum, the Wailers, and Big Head Todd and the Monsters, as part of the LP Tour, where each band is performing one of their classic records, Matthew Sweet performing Girlfriend. This happens July 20th at the Gibson Amphitheater in Universal City here in Los Angeles. And if you'd like tickets to it, a pair of passes, call right now, 818-985-5735. We're going to close up with one more song from Matthew Sweet's album, Girlfriend. We've been talking with him about this album. We actually have a second part of this interview that we'll broadcast next week, where we talk to him about the record Altered Beasts. So do stay tuned for that. We wanted to close on one more song from Girlfriend. This is a song, Your Sweet Voice, that you're going to hear right now on KPFK and Melting Pot. Sweet voice. just heard first part of our interview with Matthew Sweet. We'll have a second part next week on our show. Big thanks to Stan Mizrahi who did the sound. And once again, congrats to those of you who won tickets. And stay tuned for the second part of that next week. Folk Scene is up next, and I'll see you guys when I see you. We'll also have a news update in a moment, too, after these quick messages here at KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles, and worldwide at kpfk.org.